This is an oral history of muralist and visual artist Irene Perez for the Mission Murals Project. I'm Camilo Garzón. It was recorded on July 12, 2021, in Irene's artist studio behind her home in Oakland, California. When the recording team arrived, we were greeted by two cats, Cassie, 21 years old, and Peppa, 12. Inside of Irene's studio are prints from her storied career, including La Tierra Madre es de Todos and Stop the Endangerment de la Tierra. The voices you'll hear will be those of Irene, filmmaker Javier Briones, production assistant Natalia de la Rosa, and my own. This oral history delves into the facets of Irene's early life, her upbringing in the East Bay Area, her work in forming and creating art as a founding member of the Mujeres Muralistas, as well as the importance of recurrent icons and images of Coyuxauqui, nopales, and palm trees in her work. We also talked about her relationship to Mexico and her family straddling the US and Mexico, her work in the healthcare industry, which permitted her to work on her art, identifying as lesbiana, and her role in preserving and amplifying Chicanx and Latinx heritage in San Francisco's Mission District and beyond. Here is the oral history. Okay, so today is July 12th, 2021, and I'm here with Irene Perez, with Natalia de la Rosa, Javier Briones, and Chris Tipton King, and we're in Irene's house in Oakland, California. Thank you so much for having us here. We're talking to you on behalf of the Mission Murals Project. If you don't mind me asking and starting this way, can you tell me your full name and where were you born?
My full name is Irene Perez. I was actually born in Alameda, which is right next door, but I was made and raised in Oakland, California. I guess back in the 1950s when I was born, there was only one OBGYN. His name was Dr. Guerra, that spoke Spanish. So my mother, who did not speak English at the time, and most of my tías, and so a lot of my cousins and brothers and sisters were born in the Alameda hospital because that's where he had his privileges. So yeah, it's kind of weird when people say, where were you born? Here, sort of. Yeah, in Oakland. Yeah.
Two things there that I think are very important is I started with Irene Perez, mm-hmm. and then you told me Irene Perez. And when you think of your name, or like mm-hmm. even most of the names of us here, like they have some Hispanic sounds that sometimes okay. we don't tell. And it's an interesting thing that I did. I assumed that it would be Irene mm-hmm. because I heard Patricia on Friday saying Irene, right? Mm-hmm. Irene Perez.
Yeah.
But you decided to say Irene. Mm-hmm. Why is it that you feel sometimes like someone like Patricia that is close to you would say the name this way, but then you said it this way today?
Well, I guess it started with my family. With my mother, she would call me Morenita, Irenita. And my sister Teresa called me Irene because she could not say Irene. Okay, and as I was growing up, going to the schools in Oakland, California, I went to Catholic schools and public schools, and they immediately converted your name into Irene Perez. I guess back in the 1970s, when I met up with other Chicana artists at the time, we started to maybe begin the process of some decolonization as far as in the English world in the United States. We started using our Spanish names. Mm-hmm. And then I went to work. Went to work at the Clinica de la Raza at one point, and they called me Irene Perez. That's how I was introduced to patients, and that's what I used. And then I started to work at Kaiser hospital, which turned into a white world, and they just did not want to say Irene, you know. They all could not roll those R's, and there was only one person who actually tried. So I'm kind of like bouncing back and forth from one world to another as I'm, you know, living my life here in California. And I feel sometimes I'm bouncing all over the place, you know, but I maybe that's called code switching or, you know, to some degree. And I've just gotten comfortable with it. You know, at one point it was an issue, but I said, you know what? Okay, I just got to move on, you know, so.
That is so important that it's Irene and all of these kind of like navigations that you have had to have, not only in terms of your name, because mm-hmm. that's such an essential thing, mm-hmm. and that's why we like starting with this, but also just other identities that you also have had during your life. And how those even have changed. Mm-hmm. So I apologize that it started with Irene, because I assumed from Patricia. But look, Irene. So Irene, when you think of your family background, Zacatecas, was it your mom or your dad from Zacatecas?
It was my mother that was born in Zacatecas.
And then your dad in Texas.
And my dad in Texas.
Right. Mm-hmm. So those are two very important places in terms of your art and the inspiration. When you remember growing up, how was it growing up with parents from both of these places?
Well, it was very interesting. I mean, at first I thought it was a normal way of growing up, having parents that came, like my mother was born in Mexico, in Zacatecas. My father was born in Texas, but during the 30s, during the Depression, they were asked to go back to Mexico. They did go back. And so my father really didn't speak the English very well. He did go to school a little bit. And by that time, it was in New Mexico where Malaga, New Mexico. So I learned, maybe that's where this whole thing started with the language, you know, because we spoke Spanish at home, and then we would play with the kids out in the street, and we were speaking English, because at that time there wasn't very many people that spoke the Spanish then. It was mostly white kids, African-American kids, and us. And then slowly the Oakland, Fruitvale area converted. Yeah. So, but it was definitely interesting, you know, and I thought everybody had bilingual. I mean, I thought everybody grew up bilingually. I thought everybody had a lot of family, because I came from a family of nine. There was nine of us, plus my mom and dad. And so I thought everybody, you know, just kind of had big families. And then I have friends, and I started having friends, and they all had, you know, one or two kids, three kids. And I just thought that was, that's funny. But that's how I felt when I was growing up, a little bit.
It's kind of nice to think that, like, your own point of reference, your whole life, the way that you grow up can be applied to others. And then, of course, it also is sometimes a shock, or just even just a realization of actually they have a different kind of background than I would assume. Like, not all families are as big or as small as mine. Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting point. When, you know, you were like middle school, high school, how do you remember those years, and how do you remember even art or creativity in those years?
Mm-hmm. I think I remember the classes, the public schools. I first went to a public school, and I remember getting the big, large manila drawing paper and crayons. I thought that was just the greatest thing, you know, of being, having been able to, like, start to draw. And I didn't know, I just went right to it. And I just remember, like, when I got to the second grade, I think all the kids were before then were very creative, and they just went right to paint and drawing and everything. So I just felt normal then. But in the second grade, it all changed. I noticed that my classmates were no longer drawing anymore. You know, they were afraid to draw. And I remember at one point I had my classmates, they were saying, hey, draw this for me, draw this for me. And they would give me their piece of paper for me to draw on. And I'm going, huh, you know, what's good? I mean, I didn't think of it. And, it, you know, at that point, I didn't think of something was going on, you know, something unusual as far as with me. It's not till later that I finally realized, oh, maybe that's where, you know, maybe they saw something in me that, you know, that was different, you know, that I was actually an artist. But the word artist was foreign. It was never in our vocabulary as growing up. We never had that. So it wasn't until, you know, I guess going to school, I guess I got exposed mostly to, you know, the art classes, you know, this and that and the paints and the all kinds of different ways of doing art. And I just kind of gravitated towards it. And so all through high school, as I was growing up, going through the Beatle era, I remember it was just down the street right here. I was going to Hamilton Junior High after Catholic school, which is St. Elizabeth over here. There was just like these two different worlds. But there, I remember in this junior high, I had at least one or two periods of doing art classes. And it was like, oh, wonderful. That I felt really in my, I just felt so natural. I don't know. I just felt so free there. You know, and I think in the other classes, I just did not feel like me. And it wasn't, I guess, until high school, ready to graduate, and where I think the art really started to flourish for me. I remember there was, at that time, as far as the outside world, we still had basically the outside world influencing us, or influencing me. It was during the hippie era, the posters, the drawings that they were doing, especially here in San Francisco with the Jefferson Airplane, the Grateful Dead, and all these guys, and all these beautiful posters that they were doing. I really liked that. It was just like, wow, that's nice. And then when I got to high school, as I was a senior, things really changed. Things started happening as far as politically. We had the Vietnam War. And then right after that, there was the Black Panthers, and then it was the Chicanos. The Chicano movement started to flourish at that time. I think that's when I started to like, wow, wait a minute, there's something else going on here. And the world changed for me. And I guess that was my introduction to the Chicano awareness, or us coming from, I mean, I was always aware that I was Mexicana, you know, but Chicana, that was different, you know. And so, but it wasn't until the late 1960s I started to meet other Chicanos and Chicanas that were in the movement when it was just beginning to flourish and to start. Yeah.
There's a lot of beautiful anecdotes that you just told us regarding, for example, even the sense of understanding things in yourself due to other people seeing them first, which sometimes happens when we think of how we come to like some of the things we like, or how we come to understand ourselves and our identities. One thing that I think has been an important element is also the sense of like freedom that you're talking about, in your art. But also, I think freedom is such an essential part of who you are as a person. Mm-hmm. And I think we can get more into it as our conversation continues. But as you became even more aware of, you know, the Chicano social movement as it was happening, and you finishing high school and going to the Art Institute, you studied illustration, which Patricia, for example, was super impressed and was even mentioning to us on Friday. We'll get into how you met and all that. Mm-hmm. But how were those first years at the Academy of Arts in San Francisco?
Yes. My brother, my ex-brother-in-law, Michael Rios, was married to my sister, and he graduated first. He went to the Academy of Art, and after I graduated from high school, I went to Laney and took some art classes, and I started to build up, I guess, what in those days was a portfolio. One day I showed my portfolio to Mike Rios. I said, hey, you know, I want you to see my artwork and what I've been doing. He goes, oh, wow, you know, I should get you into the Academy of Art. You know, I know the director and or the owner or the other director, the president or whatever they were called at that time. And so, so I went through a process of showing my portfolio to the committee that was looking at the to let me in or to see if I showed any promise there. So, yeah, they let me in. They gave me a working scholarship at the time. And a lot of, you know, I found out that a lot of Chicanos were going there, and they were all on working scholarships. And a few other folks. So I ended up working for the school 20 hours, and plus I had a full-time curriculum, classes. I thought I was going to be a commercial artist. And I really learned a lot of technique, and while learning a lot of technique in drawing and illustrations, I found out that, no, I don't think I want to draw, you know, cans of soups or whatever for a living. Yeah. And I think it was about this time that I started to meet up with other the Chicano artists in the San Francisco area, in the Mission. Because I was still commuting from Oakland to the Academy of Art from home. I was still at home with my parents. So when I met up with them, I was able to move to San Francisco, and that's where I met Patricia. And back then she was Trish. And talking about names, I met her through Graciela Carrillo, and because Mike Rios was also very good friends with Rene Yanez at the time. So that's how we kind of met, through the association with Graciela Carrillo and Mike Rios.
There was a story on Friday when we were talking to Patricia that they knew your sister, and uh-huh. It is through your sister and like some parties, and also as you're saying, like you just knew each other, that then after all of these associations and all of these things happen, that you ended up being invited to, like, hey, do you want to come and paint with us a mural? Is that how it happened?
Well, it took a little while. I think... I left the Academy of Art, and then I applied for the Art Institute and got in the Art Institute, and again Consuelo was there, Patricia and Graciela, Mike Rios also, and I think at the time when we all met, well, yeah, with with, I think my sister was first of all, she was the, she knew Graciela very well. My sister Maria Perez. Well, back then she was Mary. Everybody knows her as Mary back then. And as we were all going through their our changes, we were all, I think, doing, we were independently being art students. I mean, I was an art student, you know, and I was busy with just trying to survive, trying to stay in school, for one thing. It was very difficult because they did give you, like at the Art Institute, it was a tuition waiver, which meant you didn't have to pay for the tuition, but you had to pay for the rest of everything else, you know, getting yourself there, living, your art supplies. And so it seems to me that I took a lot of time just trying to stay in school, either working. So a lot of times we were doing some small commissions in the Mission District, wherever we can find, oh, somebody wants a mural painted, you know, there's $200 available, do you want it? Yeah. You know, we're lucky to even get anything then, but we still managed. So how it happened, we were all, I remember, I did not do murals until the Balmy Alley, which Mia Gonzalez had a children's center, a children learning center right on at the end of Balmy Alley on 24th Street. And I remember they asked us, well, they asked me if I wanted to do a mural because I think Graciela and Patricia were already doing murals at Balmy Alley. So I was asked also to do a wall. And I think I was maybe one of the last ones to be asked. And that was the very first time I actually did a mural, was Balmy Alley. And I believe that was maybe 1971, 1972, somewhere in that. And I know that Patricia and Graciela were already doing murals independently, and so was Consuelo. They were doing murals within the Mission District here and there. And it wasn't until Graciela had an exhibit finally at the Galleria. She had her first, well, it was like the first ever one-woman show at the Galleria de la Raza. And I remember that Consuelo was there, and Patricia and Graciela. And I remember Consuelo actually asking us if we wanted to help her paint a mural, because she had just gotten this commission to paint the Mission Model Cities on 25th and Mission. There was a Mission Model Cities building program that was there that had this huge wall. And Consuelo, she just said, you know what, that wall is really big. And, you know, so she asked us if we could help, you know, if we can collaborate and work on this mural. And I think that was the very beginning of the Mujeres Muralistas.
When I think of Mujeres Muralistas and your work, the first time that I ever was in Balmy Alley, I think one of the first ones that I saw was the 500 Years of Native Survival that's still to this day still there. And I remember seeing your name.
Ah.
And it's such a important piece to further understand who Chicanos, Latinos, just who we are in this continent. And what prompted you to have that mural be showing these icons? Because if you think of the work that was being made by other people like Mike Rios and others during those years, this is something that Consuelo and even Patricia told us, a lot of it was, you know, like the Aztec warriors, and it was also sometimes to beautify the neighborhood, but you chose to sometimes depict different people. Starting with that mural, but in others too, but specifically for that mural, the two flanks of the mural, there's two flanks. Like, why did you decide to picture what you pictured there?
I think initially my idea of that particular mural, that very first one, is that I wanted to, I was into music. I started to get into music, and I painted myself as two people facing two different directions playing a flute. And so the music was coming out into, I think I put Nopales there, yeah. It was just something that at that point I was in my life, I just wanted to put something beautiful, because I remember that was part of the idea of the Balmy Alley, that the Balmy Alley was like this dark, scary place that we wanted to make it a safe place. And I didn't really feel I wanted to put something totally political, something that had to do with violence, because there was already too much violence and too much dark. It was too much of a dark space already for me. And I mean, one of the things I remember that it was so bad there that I remember painting, these guys would just come around. If you look at Balmy Alley, my mural is at the far end towards 25th Street, and it's almost at the very end. And, you know, guys would just come around they'd go straight into that little corner, that little end of the street, and pee, you know. It was just so bad. It was like, oh, my God, you know. So, I don't know, maybe perhaps it's still going on, but maybe not as much. But I just felt it just needed to be something that was something beautiful, something to sort of create music that hopefully, you know, silent music or something that somebody can make up. And then I repainted it again almost 10-20 years later for the bicentennial, and by then I had changed. And at that time, I painted myself and actually my girlfriend, my Catalina, who at that time was my partner. And we looked somewhat similar in there, because I think we were kind of similar. But anyway, and I repainted it with the idea of the centennial. I think that's what was happening also at the time. I have since discovered Goyo Shauki. During the late 70s, Goyo Shauki was discovered in Mexico City, and I had gone to go see Goyo Shauki. And it took me a long time to figure out what to do with Goyo Shauki, because she was all broken up, cut up and thrown, you know, down the pyramid, and, you know, which I think was the beginning of, you know, male chauvinism or whatever, the patriarch in our culture and society. Well, in our culture. So I put Goyo Shauki in the mural. And I also, because we were also gay women or lesbianas, you know, it's really a survival, you know. It's amazing. We survived that long, and we're still here. So, and thanks to, you know, my relationship with Catalina, we both became very proud and very, I guess, comfortable with being lesbianas and gay, queer. Although my very first girlfriend that I had was way back in the 70s. I came out early in the 70s, well, in 1974, 73, maybe 72, I can't remember. And then I was in a relationship with Esther Hernandez then. And that was, you know, that was a very interesting time because it was, we were both pretty much closeted at that time. You know, we were both very careful who to tell, who not to tell. Although most of the community, the Chicano community, knew, mostly because then at that time I had a lot of male suitors that came around, and you know, I had to tell them what was going on. Sorry, no, not interested. You know, but so yeah, I think even painting, besides painting the murals during the 70s, I think it was a very liberating time. It was very liberating. Not only were we leaving our immediate families, I understand, well, I knew that Patricia was leaving her husband too, and Graciela was leaving her relationship with Renee. And Consuelo had just come to this country and, you know, away from Venezuela. I think we all felt very liberated, at least I did. I mean, and also when we were painting together, when we were collaborating, we were showing our drawings, we were saying, let's put this in, let's put this in. You know, it wasn't, there was like, oh no, we can't do that. Oh no. It was so open. It was like so right. Yes, this is what we're talking about because, I just felt I just couldn't see another mural, you know, with our raza, our young men being killed by police or whatever, you know. I mean, I know it was hard for the young men, you know, our young men growing up. And I know my brothers went through it too, but they survived. We all survived somehow, and well, of course, some didn't. But I just felt there was so much left out in our culture as Chicanos, and I think we put the Chicana art, you know, I think we started without really knowing maybe the founding of Chicano art, because we just couldn't. We got away from the dark colors, especially with Mike Rios kept, why aren't you using sophisticated colors? You know, you guys are just, you know, that's, you know, they're too bright, they're too this, they're too that. And I said, well, that's our culture, that's part of our culture, this is who we are too, you know. And yeah, but you know, we had a, you know, and it wasn't, I think, until later that they finally saw it themselves, you know. So, and I'm very glad for that. Yeah. And but I think the feeling of the whole liberation, just being free from my, you know, our parents and school, you know, even then we were dropping out of, well, I dropped out of art school, and Graciela, Patricia continued with their studies to get degrees in art. But I was just feeling too liberated. I said, okay, I'm done. I'm done with all that stuff. I just got to start doing my work. Yeah. So I don't have a degree, but I just felt very strongly about just continuing my artwork. Just one of the things that I just moved off into was, you know, much later in the 90s. But the biggest thing to me was, I think, discovering Collyoshawki in the 70s, late 70s, although in the early 80s, I finally found in myself how to deal with Collyoshawki, and that was painting her, repainting her, remembering her, in other words, putting her back together, because that was one of the other things that I could not find images of Collyoshawki before the dismemberment. So where is she? What happened before then? What's going on? So I said, okay, just have to put her back together. And so when I was asked again to do murals in 1994 with the Maestro Piece Endeavor in the women's building, she was one of the prominent dioses there. And by that time, I had done a series of art of drawings and paintings of Goyo Shalky, putting her back together slowly, you know, putting her back together, her healing her arms. You can still see some wounds in some of the images that I created. So by the time I got to 1994, I'd already had an image of her all put back together, rebirthing and coming out of a maguey, which I felt the maguey as a female plant who gave so many baby, who gives baby plants all the time, always regenerating new babies. And I just felt, and then I almost felt done with her, you know. I felt done. I said, okay, I think I'm done. Then I noticed that a lot of the writers, Chicana writers, we were all putting ourselves back together. Because you know? I think as women, as Chicanas, as Mexicanas, we were held back. We were held back from even playing instruments. Drawing, being free. No, you can't go there because you have to wash the dishes, you know, you have to make your bed, you gotta, you know, clean the living room or whatever. Nope, you don't have time to go climb trees with the boys. Oh no, you know, that's what I got a lot. And so just painting those murals, being out in the mission, it was just so liberating. It was just so freeing. And I just remember not having a dull moment. You know, it was just go, you know. Once we discovered we lost the chains, although my criollos wanted us to paint images with women chained up, we said, no, we're not chained up anymore. We're not painting that. And so, yeah. You know, the guys wanted to see us still chained up. No. And I think that was one of the issues that they had, but we didn't. They had it. We didn't. I didn't.
You know, like sometimes when we have these kinds of conversations, there's like 20 questions that we want to ask, and you somehow just touched upon like so many. And I just feel humbled that you have had so much care and so much power in reclaiming even so many different things. Because it's not only the dismemberment not becoming dar anymore, mm-hmm. but reconstructing her. The nopales present in a lot of your work. Behind you on your shirt in some of the murals too. There's so many through lines that mm-hmm. get presented in your work, and a lot of it also comes from that liberation that you're talking about. Even the acceptance of who you are. I feel like, as you're saying, since the 70s, just even understanding yourself in some of these lights and even some of these other artists we've talked to, like Esther or, you know, It's just really incredible to hear all of these things that you've done so mindfully, to like so intentionally. It doesn't feel like anything, but very much you knew that this is so important to who you are. And you also didn't want to represent just what others like my criollos or others were telling you. Mm-hmm. You knew which colors also were people like you, people like us. You knew that women don't need to be chained at all. That this is how we want to present ourselves too. And I feel like that's something radical that we've noticed too, that I know you've said that you didn't want to do a lot of political things. I think one of the most important political things that you all also did is you presented yourself as who you were also in a mural, mm-hmm. or just women in a way that was the, you know, like if you worked in a bakery, you worked in a bakery. And it's beautiful to know that you also are represented in this public art. So I think that that is something that you've done exceptionally for a long time. And we really value you just being so honest and welcoming to us in that sense, just having this semblance of your life. There's so much there. Do you have any questions?
I was wondering if you could maybe expand a little bit more on, you know, that moment of freedom, right? Like, I think you talked on the, you know, the Black Panthers, the idea that, you know, Chicanidad, Latinidad was coming into its own, and in many ways, like, it was in the air, and then it was, you know, the Mujeres Muralistas coming together and breaking those chains and painting together. I wonder if you could talk about, like, what, you know, how did it feel different for you to paint with this group of women versus maybe other collaborations you had, or maybe your daily life around men? How did it feel to be working with these three other women and doing it all on your own? How was that for you?
I think the air at the time that I was growing up, the temperature was breaking out, like the Black Panthers, the Chicano movement, you know, the anti-war situation with Vietnam. It was all about liberating. It was all about breaking away from what I saw as normal, or this is how I grew up as a child and going through schools, being educated, and this is how it is. You know, you don't fit in it, you don't fit in it. And I think I was very lucky, first of all, that I grew up in this era of, first of all, knowing what we thought was normal, and it's not, you know, according to me, and according to a lot of folks at the time. And it was, I think, the ground... growing up in high school, I think it was just the ground of something that, for me, it was just a natural progression. That when it came time to actually work and to collaborate with other Chicana women who perhaps grew up, we all kind of grew up the same way. We kind of all grew up. With the same supposedly norms, and we didn't fit in those norms, or we reject those norms. So I think when we started working together, for me, it was just so wide open. It was so wide open because there was no guidebook. There wasn't a guidebook that said, okay, this is how you do it with, you know, a group of women, or Chicano women, or, you know, we knew each other somewhat, but we really didn't know each other until we started doing our own artwork together as a collaboration to grow or to thread or weave this story about us. You know, the story that we perhaps didn't even know. And it was just, I think it just made you feel like brand new almost every day when we worked together. This was new, this was new, this that was new. Hey, painting on this huge wall was new. Putting up scaffolding, building the scaffolding, you know, putting it together, mixing paints with a group of women, and it just worked so smoothly. It just worked like if this is what what we should have been doing all this time. You know, and it just became a beautiful thing. It was just like, you know, very life affirming. You know, it's like we said, yeah, you are somebody. You are Chicana. You're Mexicana. You're Venezuelana, or you know. I think we put the A into everything. You know, all of a sudden we shifted to a feminine view and perspective. You know, because I remember doing artwork even in junior high school. It was all the perspective of the male perspective. You know, if I drew anybody, it was a guy. And I hadn't really thought, well, what am I, you know? I didn't think about that until, you know, I started to do murals with the Mujeres Muralistas. We just shifted. It was like putting the car in gear and, hey, we're going this way now, you know? And this is our way. And it was amazing because it was like sort of rediscovering ourselves, re-putting ourselves back together. It was like if we put on different lenses, all of a sudden the world changed. And I think that was the most interesting aspect of working together with other women, especially Chicanas. Although we all came from different geographical areas, Graciela came from LA, I grew up here in the East Bay, Patricia, Texas, and Oxnard, and of course Consuelo from Venezuela, which is amazingly that we came together and respected each other, and it was just so open, it was so new. It was just amazing. It's amazing.
When, you know, you think of these things that became so natural and so normal for you four, that then started becoming more natural and normal for other collectives of women artists. As you said, you added the A to a lot of nouns, a lot of adjectives too. Mm-hmm. It is really remarkable to hear that you felt so comfortable with them. But at the same time, there has been pushback, or there was pushback by even other men like Mike Rios. Like even Patricia was telling us a couple of stories on Friday, for example, about how Mike not only was talking about the imagery or like the colors, but also like, that's good, right? Like he didn't really speak of like how great it was. It was just good. Mm-hmm. What were some of the other experiences that you personally, Irene, or with the Mujeres Muralistas, had with other artists that were, for example, male, or mm-hmm. even other guys that would stop and talk to you while you were working, like in Balmy or in the Mini Park, or even when you were doing the Maestra piece? Mm-hmm. Like, what were some of those experiences?
Well, the one thing I can think of that I thought was very, I think, that was a very hard time. Once we had done murals, we had gotten a lot of media coverage from outside of the community. We got a lot of reporters from the San Francisco Chronicle, the local stations. We even had a reporter come in, a Chicano reporter, come from one of the local stations in San Francisco. I'm having a hard time remembering his name, and I'm trying to reach out to other folks that remember who I'm talking about. And anyway, he came to Graciela and said that he wanted to do a small documentary on the Mujeres Muralistas. And so we said, yes, yeah, of course. So he came, he filmed us, he talked to us. And so this reporter then wanted to showcase the documentary at the Galleria della Raza. And this was probably in 1976. I'm going to say it's around that time. And we were very excited about this. We said, oh, wonderful. You know, we went to the presentation. We show up at the presentation, and all of a sudden, the Galleria turned into a counter-protest. It was a counter-protest to the documentation and to the reporter that came from the outside of the mission and that came to the mission to do a documentary on us. And they wanted to counter... They stopped the whole thing. And I just wanted to say that it was the Mission Media Art Center, the Mission Media Art Association or Center, who was behind the actual protest. And I remember that Patricia really had a confrontation with them. And we were there. It was like a confrontation. And I can't remember if I said or I... It was just so emotional, so crazy. And, you know, we thought it was going to be a big blowout. I just wondered, either at the time or I'm not sure if I even told them. I said, well, where were you guys? Where were you, the Mission Media Arts Center, wherever you are? How come you didn't come to us? You know, you never showed up. We never saw you. I mean, this is the first time I'm actually hearing of you guys, you know. And so they succeeded in not being able to see this document, you know, this documentary. As of right now, I don't really remember seeing it, and I was just, it was just such an emotional kind of blowback that was very strong, that I don't even remember even actually viewing or even seeing the documentary. And I'm just wondering what happened to that documentary. I mean, what happened to that that film?
Do you remember who was leading that center at that time? Like, was it mostly like...
It was Ray Barberón, Ray Rivera, and I believe Domingo Rivera.
So mostly men.
They were all men, yeah. They had some women there behind them, but, you know, I just remember them three, yeah. And, you know, it was just such a strong, awful blowback that... It was heartbreaking. I said, okay, I'm done with you guys. I'm done. I'm going back to my studio, do my own work. Okay, you know, just because it was just disheartening. It was, you know.
Yeah, especially like you and the other Mujeres Moralistas. Did you feel like that documentary that you haven't been able to watch or you know, witness, do you feel like it had a lot of you in it and a lot of what you represented as the Mujeres Moralistas? Like, was it respectful and everything? And
I think so, yes, because I think I don't remember him asking like from an outsider. He felt he was an insider, you know, somebody from, well, he was Chicano, he was Raza, he was a professional working for the local. And I think he really wanted to present us in a positive light. And I think that came through because I don't remember it being confrontational, you know, as we were doing the documentary, you know. So, yeah, but that was very disheartening, that whole episode. So at this point, I'm trying to, Mia did give me somebody's name that said, oh, yeah, she was there, too. And, you know, she knows, she may know the reporter. So we might be able to get a hold of that documentary, too. I need to. Oh, I think you interviewed her, Ana Montaño.
Ana Montano, Montano. Yeah.
Yeah, apparently she's now a lawyer, or maybe at that time she was in law school. But apparently, I think she, Mia says that she's pretty sure she knows who the reporter is.
Okay.
And because I've been trying to like dig it out of my head, and I just can't seem to.
You gave us some clues here, so that's good to know. And I think that this is at least a surprise for me and for most of us that there's even this documentary that is, if anything, trying to do most of what we're trying to do. So, yeah, we'll follow that lead, too.
Did Consuelo also mention the documentary that Huascar Carrillo did, her ex at that time? He also did a film, and he's supposed to be digitizing it. So, and he filmed as well. We were doing the first mural.
Yeah.
I don't think we've... Mm-hmm. It's the films that we have seen of you all have been when you filmed outside of... When there was a media outside of Paco's Tacos.
Oh, okay.
Painting.
Oh.
And then I've seen... there's a short video of Graciela and Patricia when they're painting the mini park.
The mini park, right. Those are the ones I've seen, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I've not seen these other...
Yeah.
Although we have heard there are documents that do exist that we have not seen.
Yeah. Well, those are those two that I know of right now that are out there somewhere. Yeah.
Do you have a follow up or I had a question we could ask actually about the mini park a little bit.
So, the mini park.
Yeah. I'm wondering if you could kind of tell us for people that don't know anything about this mural, about the mini park, if you can tell us about how it came together and what you painted at the mini park.
Yes. I wanted to say that, sadly, this was the last Mujeres Muralistas mural that we did together. And again, it was without Consuelo. I believe at this time she had already left to go back. She went back to Venezuela. And this was the last time I painted with Graciela and Patricia in 1976, I believe. The mural was commissioned, I believe, by, I don't know if it was the San Francisco Art Commission people, and they were funded by CETA. You know, Graciela and Patricia had acquired CETA positions that were actually being paid to work on the murals, the mural at the mini park. I did not have CETA, a job there. So I worked actually free on that one, and I believe they shared some funds with me. And the idea of the mini park was a mini park. It was a park for children. And we really, we really focused on the children. We really did. Well, we did a fantasy theme to it. I think we really had fun with it because it was something that we didn't go out and look and research. Did the National Geographics or any other photographs? We actually worked from just making it up. And so I remember Graciela saying, "Oh, I want to put the diosa, but I want to put the diosa del sol. And I said, "Oh, wonderful. Yeah, because usually it's male somehow. El dios del sol and the lunas, the female." So, and so that's where I remember starting with that and working also in a jungle scene. We wanted to add more plants to the, I felt we should have plants, more plants and trees in the mini park, since at that time there wasn't very many trees. And so we put in a jungle, we put animals, little monkeys, and I remember I put in the volcano and the trees, the palm trees. And I remember those palm trees because those are the trees that I remember drawing as a second grader. And that's what I was drawing was palm trees as a second grader. And that's when my classmates started to ask me to draw for them. And that's what they wanted. Draw me a palm tree. Just like yours, you know, and and it's funny. I don't know why that just came to me right now. As a matter of fact, So it was maybe perhaps for me going back to my childhood too, like what it was like. Because I remember the school I was going to as a second grader. There was no trees. It was asphalt, totally asphalt and buildings, you know. So I must have wanted to put trees in my life back then as a second grader. So I don't know.
You know, those images, like what you're just sharing with us, and that's the beautiful thing of memory and just telling stories, like that through line, even the palm trees, las palmeras, las palmas, like they're part of it. They became part of like one of the most iconic murals that San Francisco has ever had, and it was part of even something you did as a kid, like wanting something that you were not seeing around you, even a tree, and that in and of itself helped kids probably see trees in the mission that is not necessarily as full of trees either.
That's right.
So what you lacked, these kids also lacked, but you gave them this in your art too. I think you were going to say something else.
I just wanted to say that this mural is still there and it's still available to be seen. It is in badly need of restoration. I was asked if we would if we would repaint it, and I'm going, oh no. I mean, I was just thinking of the climb of the scaffolding and all of that, and I'm not sure if I can do that again, but it is available to be seen right now, and go out and see it before it disappears. And there's the last mural that I believe it was painted in Balmy Alley is still the original Balmy Alley, the very first wave of murals, the children's murals.
When
so that's still available.
Yeah, both of them.
Both of them badly need a restoration.
That's one of the questions that I think we've all been talking about, which is just, as you're saying, like right now, the climbing as scaffold or like even all these things that you were doing in the 70s, they are different and they're sometimes even physically more difficult, of course. But as you're saying, it would be great if they can still happen. Do you think there's a possibility for other artists that maybe you or the Mujeres Muralistas could instruct to either restore or like find a way to restore and have some conservation effort on it, because they're still there. It's the last one remnant of Mujeres Muralistas, and then this other one in Balmy is in much better shape than the one in Mini Park, but still needs some help. It's still old. Is there any plan that you think could happen of you and the Mujeres teaching some people or helping still conserve it, restore it?
Yeah, it had already been restored this once before. We did have a couple of young women work with us, with me and Patricia and I. And for the future, that idea sounds very, very good. There are so many young artists now that are doing murals in the mission that are very capable, and I know that Presida Eyes and Susan Cervantes have asked us to work on a project to restore it. But I think the problem is, I don't know if the funding has been the challenging part, you know, because I don't think I could do it for free again. I've done it twice for free. I mean, I just think we should be paid. I think it's time that, you know, we're working artists. We have a living to, you know, to take care of. And it's sad that I had to take a full-time job outside of art to do medicine, which was a beautiful job and career too. With the job outside of art, I was able to do more art. I was able to build a studio. I was able to continue doing screen painting, screening shirts, continue to do my artwork. But I couldn't do it in the mission or in the community anymore because it just was not paying. I just remember that Patricia, we were just going through her archives and she saved some receipts. And I remember she jotted down, working at the mini park, I was paid $10 for something, I can't remember what it was, you know, just for maybe coming and showing up and working. And I'm thinking, oh my God, that's incredible. I can't believe I did that, you know. But I think at the time that I was working with the mini park, I was in a relationship that helped support me in being able to do that. Although we both in this relationship, we supported each other. So I think without the support of my relationship with you know, Esther and Catalina, I think a lot of this work may not have been done, you know. So I really want to shout out to them too as well. Just because I remember the support. I remember working in here. I remember Catalina going in the kitchen, working up a fabulous dinner. And I just wanted to, you know, thank her and you know, and now that I'm on my own, I don't see doing this for free no more. So, I don't know. It's kind of iffy. It's iffy. But I would really want the muralist or the artist to get paid well, you know. And I think we need to leave that idea of getting paid as anybody else, as a lawyer would get paid, an architect, you know. It's just sad that we were taken for granted.
A lot of this work that you've referenced today and that we've asked you about, you've said that you haven't gotten paid, or like you didn't get paid, you did it for free. And it's one of the most iconic parts of what the San Francisco Mission District still has to offer, even if some of these murals are still not there, right? Like we only have Mini Park and we have that one in Palmy Alley, but Latin America, they are still the stuff of legends, and at the same time, they're the stuff of you didn't even pay the people that made this iconic piece. Mm-hmm. And it's very important, and I think only fair, that you're suggesting that muralists and other artists get paid for the work that they're doing because it's work. Mm-hmm. And you're doing it in a way that it's not about, hey, you should have paid me and I'm still waiting for a paycheck. You're mm-hmm. saying this is an important thing that we still need to acknowledge. So that's mm-hmm. one part. The other thing is, it's very important that you received support, but you also provided support, right? Like mm-hmm. people like Esther, or even as you're referencing your partner, Catalina, from many years ago, it's important to recognize that you are also recognizing that labor. Mm-hmm. And hopefully there's funding for these pieces to be restored, and you know, hopefully there's a conservation effort, but that these people also get paid fairly. if you ever get involved with it, even if it's educating muralists, that you also get compensated fairly, because mm-hmm. that's also work. So I think that that's very important. One of the other things that I think we're very interested in is when you think of, you know, even Latin America or the mini park mural, any of these murals that you did with the Mujeres Muralistas, what are some of those memories that come to mind of even just painting a day? You know, like what are some of those like mm-hmm. images or feelings or sensations that you're, that come to mind when you think of those moments?
You know, the those moments of painting with the other women, you know, they were so rewarding in itself. They were, I felt maybe at the time that that was enough pay for me at the time. Now that I think about it, painting with Graciela and Patricia, and how we, you know, we would be chatting, and it was like, I remember like my tias, when we visited them in Zacatecas, I remember they would sit at the end of the day, my tias would sit there and they would be crocheting or they would be embroidering and they would be talking and talking, you know, and I remember it felt like such a fun, you know, it felt really good. It felt really good. And that's what I really felt painting with the Mujeres Muralistas. It was kind of that camaraderie, the togetherness, as if we were embroidering one cloth, which was the mural, or we were weaving this one tapestry. Yet it didn't feel like work. It didn't feel like a job. It felt just so rewarding. I mean, and I think maybe that's why I did it for free twice, you know, especially the mini park. And speaking about restoration, I just went to go see a mural this last Sunday that was painted with La Doña. It was the little party, that little celebration of the mural. And then we walked to a taqueria down Mission Street, and we walked by the building where the first mural, Latino America or Pan America, I can't remember what was the title. I saw at the very tip top of that wall, it's the paint that they painted over the mural, it's starting to peel, and I swear I see the mural coming through. There's a little part in the very top, closest to the street. There's a section where the paint is peeling off. And I think I mentioned it that, wow, the mural is still there. You know, that mural is still there. Baco Tacos is gone. The fence that it was painted on is gone. Although I hear there is some pieces that have survived, and Susan Cervantes may have some pieces of that fencing and mural. And I am just so glad also in that they brought out the Diego Rivera mural fresco that was at the San Francisco City College. I remember seeing it only once in all the time that I remember ever going to see it. It was so depressing to see it there. It was very, very dark. It was very, just very depressing. And I just don't remember anything of it. It was just like, oh my God, it was not a very good experience. So I'm just very happy in a way that they brought out the fresco of the Diego Rivera. And then that is also about time that happened. And it's amazing that it did happen. And I hope maybe we can, I don't know if we can restore that mural or resurrect it. I don't know, maybe not. Who knows?
Including also, as you're saying, there's these panels that recently you found out that Susan Cervantes has in a top floor of Presita is currently.
Yeah, perhaps in the roof, she said.
So hopefully even that, like, depending on the state of that, like, that is also one of the most important murals there. Today, like, it's news that there's some of the panels that might exist still. So that's hopefully something that can happen. Because, and I think that this is an important thing to establish, while Diego and, you know, Orozco, Siqueiros were so documented, you also did way more interesting things in terms of the representation in the 70s, and you did what they couldn't, which is part of what you did is the murals that you did inspired other murals around the world. And that's part of your legacy of, of all of this work that you did, even for free, which to me it still is, it doesn't sit well because it's such an amazing work, and I'm glad that you had the support system, but you shouldn't have needed it.
Right.
Because that also is important. When you see these murals, like the Maestra piece, which was definitely later in your life, you collaborated with other people like Susan Cervantes, with Juan Alicia, with Edith Boone, and all of these people added elements to it. One of them you were referencing earlier, right? On one corner, you decided to really, in a sense, I don't know if it would be correct to say this, but for yourself, you decided to bring her together again. When you see the images that you chose and others chose, what is the significance of that mural, especially knowing that it is still probably one of the most known murals in San Francisco to this day? When you see those images on those things, like, what are some of the memories that come up for you?
For the women's building?
Sí, para el maestro piecing with the women's building.
Yeah, it, you know, it it was almost the same, almost the very same thing working with women. You know, it's still very free and liberating. And the process of doing the mural, we used the very same process as the Mujeres Muralistas, and that was a joint collaboration. We all came with images and drawings. We did have a theme that the women's building or the women's building community, women's community, wanted to see in the mural. So it was, that's us too, you know. So it was very easy just to flow with the images and to collaborate and to put it together in some sort of amazing composition that works with so many women involved in the actual designing of it. And that was the first time I worked with six other women, which is Miranda Bergman, Susan Cervantes, Juan Alicia, Edith Boom, Yvonne Littleton, and Mira Dice. I mean, we were really such a, you know, I mean, some of the women I just didn't even know. It was the first time I met them. But it was so natural. It was so at ease. And I remember Mira Dice painting Kuan Yin in her at-ease pose. And that's how it really felt, you know, with my experience working with the other women artists. Yes, of course, we did have little clashes here and then, but, you know, that was the clashes maybe were important for that minute or two, you know, or whatever. And we were very conscious of resolving it, not to, you know, oh, we didn't shine it on, we dealt with it. And that was, and we only had one problem painting the women's building within ourselves, within the designers and the painters. And it was quickly resolved, you know, by pulling it out. Okay, let's pull it out. Where did this come from? You know, blah, 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 blah. You know, and I think for all of us, we were, you know, I just remember saying, you know, we have to resolve this because look at the wall. We still got to finish this. We still got to paint this beautiful mural we want to do. And they go, oh, yeah, okay. So just in thinking of the goal to finish this huge mural, I think was the engine to get this resolved and done with. And it worked.
It worked because also I think one of the things that I think you're very good at is the collaboration that you have with others. And even though you have a vision and they can have a vision as well, mm-hmm. of the imagery or like a specific part of it, as you're saying, there's the resolve, there's the resolution of things. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I think is essential about this mural especially is something that you were telling us all before we started this conversation, which is some of them do look very similar images or even styles. Stylistically, that's something Javier was asking you. And you explained that there's something that it seems Susan did with the paint that made it be, you know, like, cohesive. Because all of those different styles, they could be dissonant or divergent, and somehow it still feels like a cohesive mural. Mm-hmm. The four sides, mm-hmm. and the top on both sides of the building. What was it that made these be cohesive, not only in the collaboration, but also mm-hmm. like on the actual physical paint?
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that that we had on our team was Susan Cervantes. She had been doing a lot of murals. And I remember she took on the job of mixing all the colors for us, you know, because we can have 10, 15 different bases of green, and they would clash with another green over here and this and that. So she sort of put the common thread, so to speak, the palette. She created the colors that we were going to use, which we all had been using already, but she made sure that, you know, it was all coming from, you know, the same source. And when you were asking me this question, I was also thinking about, well, you know, it reminds me also of growing up in a big family. Like I said, we were nine of us. And how did we resolve conflict? And I remember we resolved it right away. We just, and then it was over. And our common thread was our parents or my mother, my mama Guga, you know. She'd always say, okay, that's enough, you know. And boom, it was over. So when you asked me this question, it immediately drew me back to my family, including the part when in resolving conflicts. It reminded me of my family. And it reminded me also of how, I guess, in resolving conflict and color, you know, selection, Susan was very smart in mixing the color palette. And in thinking ahead of, you know, there's a lot of us, we're painting in different styles, but somehow it came together because of the color palette that Susan Cervantes had had the foresight to do it. And I think that was the experience as a muralist who's been doing murals for a very long time. I believe that it was 20 years after the first mural that the Mujeres Muralistas did. And we did use the same paints. They came out of the same buckets. And without thinking, you know, of that situation, you know, but using different colors. I also wanted to, in painting murals and also in having not really all that much experience painting murals. I remember when we were about to paint the Banamérica on Mission Street, as the first mural as the Mujeres Muralistas, we had this great opportunity to have a consultation with Emily Packard. We met her in her studio, and she gave us a lot of pointers, you know, on how to deal with the painting murals. And I just remember, I remember we had lots of questions and conversations, and what stuck to my mind was, at the time, was be sure to get up there and measure the wall yourself, because it's going to be different what they give you. You know, like the building or whoever said, oh, it's 25 by la 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 feet. Nope, go out and measure it. And so I just remember that it's been all these women that have really contributed it to the possibility of, you know, continue to do our work, to do our artwork, to keep putting more and more pieces of ourselves together, putting Chicana art out there, you know, and, you know, that's it.
So going back to the women's building, how did you hear about it? Who told you, you know, that there was going to be a new mural to collaborate on? And who decided, if anyone decided, that there was only going to be 7 women?
I believe that Miranda Bergman was on a committee with the women's building. I believe that they left it up to Miranda Bergman to choose the artists. And I remember Miranda Bergman and Juan Alicia, you know, inviting me to be one of the artists. I accepted. At that time, I was still very young, hey? and I believe that's how it came to happen, as far as the selection, how I got selected and how the other muralists got selected. It was either by people we already worked with. And of course, I think they wanted me to work with them because I was one of the original Mujeres Muralistas to come and work with them. And I was, yes, let's do it. Yeah.
That experience of after you were part of the Mujeres Muralistas and then you had the last murals with them and then you had the Maestra piece with these bigger collective, mm-hmm. right? Like 4 to 7, that's more people. One of the things that I think is essential is the way that, as you were saying, resolving conflicts, resolving even like conflicts of visions, conflicts of colors, and just trying to figure out those styles and have a cohesive thing. When you think of your own style and the way that you still are doing El Nopal and even La Tierra Madres de Todos, some of these prints that are so special and even part of that Maestra piece book, what still inspires you? What are some of those things that you keep referencing? Images or experiences of?
Yeah, I think for now, I feel like I'm going through a recycle. My images and what inspires me to do artwork is Mexico. I'm still going back to Mexico to get inspired, because I feel that that's, when I go visit Mexico and I go visit my family, I feel that this is something that I have been missing all my life as I was growing up here on this side of the border. I just missed out on so much. The culture, my family, my mother's family, my dad's family that still live in Mexico, and how they do things and how they celebrate things and how they see the world. I always go back to Mexico, you know, and I always go, it seems like I always go back to maybe when I was 5 years old, 7, 8, 9 years old. I think those were another liberating time before things got really, you know, before you get into junior high, which is, you know, and, yeah, especially when I was a tomboy, you know, I didn't fit in very well with the girly stuff and the boys and this and that. But I think my references is still going back to Mexico. I just feel so at home there. I just feel like, oh, I'm just missing something. I'm just like, oh, you know, yeah, it's part of my DNA. I'm missing my DNA, the rest of it. Although I do have European blood, too. I have not gone to Europe yet, but one day.
One question that I sometimes have been asking on these kinds of oral histories is very open question, but I think it's a nice question because it can be answered in so many different ways, which is there anything that you need to tell us for us to understand you better as a person?
That goes very deep. I think the one thing that I've always felt once I've sort of discovered who I was is that I'm a very free person. I don't move in cliques. I don't like moving in cliques. I'd really, if it's a clique that I find myself into, I jump over to the other side just because I want to be free. I want to think freely. I want to do freely. And that upsets a lot of people, but, you know, I just feel I've got to do this and I'll probably continue doing it. And if I feel comfortable with a set of people or like the women that I've worked with and painting the murals, to me, the goal was much bigger than our different personalities, our different ways of doing things, our different ways of saying things, and maybe, you know, looking at things, but somehow they come together. And that's what I personally like to see is the commonality of where we're at with people, with somebody I'm with. There's the commonality that I find myself in. And if the commonality is not there, then either it's a problem for me personally. Then I open up, you know, I said, okay, what am I missing here? But I just want people to know that I'm really a free person, but I'm a Chicana, Mexicana, lesbiana. And I'm a mujer.
Thank you for sharing that with us. I have a couple more questions, but how about you guys?
Yeah, I have a few questions that you want
to ask. Some more? Okay, you have a few more? Okay.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that with us. I'm wondering if you, you know, looking back at Okay, the way that I see it, let me just say, is that I think that you and the other mujeres muralistas did something that is almost immeasurable in its impact. And I say this not just from my perspective, but from hearing so many other artists, not only women artists, but artists in general that came after you. But specifically women artists that came after you that said, well, yeah, you know, they did it, and I saw women on a scaffolding for the first time, and that was something I'd never seen before, and I thought, well, maybe that's something that I can do now as an artist. I think, you know, that, I think that legacy is immeasurable. But if we were to encapsulate it, you know, if you were to, where you are now, look back on what you did, you know, what do you think your impact and the impact of the Mujeres Muralistas has been on the muralist movement and the mission?
Well, I think the, besides, well, I guess the image itself, as this question is kind of answered itself, seeing women on scaffolding doing murals, painting, expressing how we view the world as women, as Chicanas, Latinas, and how we change that, I guess, narrative, that we change the lens somehow, we collect something. And looking back at it, I'm amazed. I find myself amazed because I didn't feel at the time that I was doing anything different, or I wasn't, it didn't seem to me like a big influencer, you know. But it took a while, or perhaps it's taken, what, so many years later to look back at it and say, wow, yeah, I guess we did a lot of influencing, including a lot of the male artists who were there at the time, the other Chicano artists. There was a lot of change up with them. Although we didn't, still we did not see much support from them. But it really, it made the Chicana women artists or future artists really just go right ahead and do it, you know, without thinking there's any barriers or limitations, just like we did. That's how we approached doing the murals. That's how we approached doing our artwork. We didn't see the limitations until somebody brought them up, and there were usually our male counterparts that brought up the limitations, you know, and we just steamrolled right through. And I'm glad we did it. It seems like we had to do it. It was right to do it at that time, and everything just fell in place. And I can just say, we were very lucky to be in this time and space that we had in the 70s. Because I can only think of my mother, that we just dodged that bullet, you know. She really lived still in the dark ages. And I remember growing up in those dark ages and coming out into light, you know, where we found who we were as individuals, or as an artist, as how we found ourselves also in a larger picture in a community, and, as you know, besides in the family, still it was boys girls, but to see it in one big frame, you know, as I think now we can all hold hands now and do this together, you know. I think the young people like yourselves have been handed that key, that go ahead. And I'd like to acknowledge also the young people who are now just going for it, you know, including all the young men. And also the young men, a lot of young men who would see themselves as, I would say, gay, you know, that had found themselves free from those binary constraints that we as gay people, queer people, find ourselves into as it is. I have to give you guys, you young people, you know, my applause too for all the work that you guys are all doing too. Not guys, but mujeres también. Especially the mujeres.
I guess what I want to ask is, you mentioned like handing the key to younger generations, so now it doesn't seem like a crazy idea that you see women painting or you see women creating murals. So just so it doesn't seem like this is an easy thing or was an easy thing for you guys to do because you are the first, if you have any memories or any, I guess, stories of those difficult times being a mujer and painting or being lesbian and painting, if anyone knew at the time, like, what did you experience as you're doing what you love? Were you told it was wrong? Did you get any stares and comments? You know, just your experience with it.
Well, like I said, in this whole era, I felt liberated. I didn't feel like I wanted to be chained up, you know, even though, you know, I've gotten, you know, I just want to say that those feelings or those experiences that we had as women at the time of, you know, the male chauvinism, it almost felt part of the culture. It was like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that, you know. But I personally felt, okay, that's not going to happen with me anymore. And it wasn't, I'm not going to go there anymore, you know. Even though there was some experience, you know, I just didn't look over there. I didn't hear it. You know, it just went, you know, because I had I had another mission, or I had already decided that, no, this is what I'm going to do. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do, you know. It was more of an exploration of who I was, and that's what was important to me. Those particular incidents, you know, I don't even remember very many of them at the time, because I think I felt so emboldened, I guess, so to speak, that perhaps it was like a shield, you know, this invisible shield that we, at some point it stopped, you know, at some point that it stopped, it went undercover, it went under, at this point, maybe perhaps I was shielding myself from those kind of comments or those putting myself in those situations for somebody to say something. Yeah.
I don't think we want to like ask further if you don't want to like say specific examples, but I think that it is, I feel, such a testament of who you were. And the mujeres muralistas that you still had to endure some of those things. I you know, Patricia did tell us a couple of incidents of just very uncomfortable situations, even just painting. Mm-hmm. And again, you don't have to mention anything because we've heard it from Patricia, but it still was something, as you were saying, that you had to still either like let it pass over you mm-hmm. or at the same time shield yourself from it. That's very hard to do either
yeah.
way.
There was maybe I should bring up in one situation that did bother me that I thought was I believe that I remember we had gotten a lot of flack from Malaquias Montoya to the point that I believe he was also standing on the premise that this is Chicano art, you know, it's about politics, it's, you know, it's about the oppression, and these are the images, they're black, white, and red, you know, and those were his images, and what he wanted to portray. And I remember having some discussions with him, and also Graciela Carrillo had also wrote a letter to him that, no, we are not like that. I mean, we, saying Graciela Carrillo is not like, has a different viewpoint, or the Mujeres Muralistas has a different viewpoint. There was some documentation in one of the books that I'd now recently read, as even last year, that he is claiming that he taught me and Patricia silk screening, and this is not correct. And I'm like, what? And so that's perhaps one of the big experiences that did bother me was Malaquias Montoya, you know, insisting that no, you know, what you're doing is not Chicano art. So, hey, all I can say is we proved him wrong. You know, no, he's right. We're not Chicano art. We're Chicana art.
Still are proving.
Mm-hmm. It's still art. And it's
those
still
people
happening.
Wrong.
Yeah.
Another thing Patricia was talking a lot about was dreams. Like her dreams, what she wanted to be, you know, as a little girl. And I think it would be nice to hear if you had any dreams, or if you were kind of boxed in by like Mexican cultural standards or traditions. And I mean, talk a lot about being free and a liberated person, so maybe you didn't feel in a box.
No, I didn't feel like I was in a box. I think maybe because I was sensing that I was different as far as being a lesbiana, gay, queer. I didn't quite fit in a lot of boxes. So to me, it was easy to, okay, if I don't fit in this, then where is it? Where is my box? Or where is my something, whatever it is, my life, who I am? Initially, when I was growing up, the box of the cultural, you're a girl, you're, you know, he's a boy, you know, it was constraining. But I remember just working my way out of that, you know. I climbed the trees, I put on jeans when nobody else was wearing jeans, girls at that time. And, I climbed the trees, and I even rode a 26-inch bike, a boy's bike. That was almost anatomically incorrect at 7 or 8 years old. I somehow rode a bike. I remember that because one of my tías said, I remember seeing you riding Chico's or Manuel's bike, you know, which was a 26-inch bike, and it's a boy's bike, but the bar, you know, and I was only this tall. So I don't know. I somehow worked my way around those boxes, found another path. Okay, if I can go that way, then I'll go this way and I'll go that way. And maybe coming from a big family, maybe that was part of it too, because you had to find other options. You had to find other ways to get to that tortilla, or, you know, or get to that plate of beans or frijoles, you know, what we can have in a big family in those days. We had to find different ways of doing, find a different path. Yeah.
I think we could talk to you for like days, as we have been able to like be honored by talking to some other people that you also know and have even mentioned today. And I don't think that this is like an end conversation. This is not a, this is what you said and nothing else can be said. It's more like, if anything, an invitation to learn more about you.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's that, I think that the best way to, I would say, conclude this as a for now mm-hmm. conversation would be, you know, is there anything else about your life or even legacy, like just legacy as a word, that you haven't been able to express before or say before? And I understand, as you were just saying, you're a very liberated person. You've shown it not only in your art and actions, but also just even in these kinds of ways that you're referencing. Is there anything else that you would like to say that you haven't said before?
I don't know. That's a very hard question. I think since growing older or experiencing life that I did and the paths I took, I did see that there was a lot of roadblocks with the, I guess, mainstream society. And I just hope that the mainstream society can open up to not only themselves, also to open up to their immediate family who may feel different, who may feel that they can do other things safely, they can do things their way without hurting anybody or without a malicious intent. And so I just feel that those were my biggest roadblocks, having to deal with the mainstream society or the white world, which I still haven't really felt comfortable in. And I don't know if I'll ever feel comfortable in it. Perhaps when I was growing up, I did feel comfortable because I just really didn't know what was going on. And I just want to say that the mainstream society or whoever is in charge, you know, I could be really pissed off. You know, I could really burn things down if I had to, but I don't want to do that. But I don't want to sound ungrateful either, but, you know, I did want to go to college when I was going to school, and I didn't know I was tracked not to go to college through school, through the school system that we have here. I thought I was going to college when I got to my high school senior year. Here, I'm getting ready. And they go, wait a minute, you're not. I didn't have all the prerequisites for college. So that really pissed me off, you know, and I feel really pissed off about the systems that I grew up in, and perhaps kept me from, you know, just going to college and being comfortable in college and knowing what I'm supposed to do, knowing what I need to know. When I was there, I did go to art school, I did go to the art colleges there, and yet, you know, I felt a little out of place because I felt I didn't culturally receive the prep or the, the priming, they call it priming now, the prepping of going into the societies that outside of my families. Outside of my culture, outside of my neighborhood, the Fruitvale, outside of East Oakland. So I don't know if I can blame anybody, but yeah, there's blame, and yeah, you know, that's about the only thing I can say about what I hadn't really said this in a long time or publicly.
I think that that's only fair, because out of the Mujeres Muralistas, as you were saying, like, some of them did finish school and you did divert from that path, but there were also other things along the way that made you not be able to finish, as you just explained. And I feel like that also explains other things that are also not at all your responsibility. Like, some of them were choices, as you also told us earlier, but some others were designed that way. And I'm very glad that even with those roadblocks, as you described, you were still able to create and keep being able to create. And I think on behalf of all of us, we thank you for this honor you just gave us, and listening to you tell your stories. And as I was saying, hopefully this is just a start to getting to know more about Irene Perez.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Thank you too.
After speaking with Irene, what really stood out to me is the significance of the support systems throughout her life and the importance her identities as a Chicana, Mexicana, Lesbiana, and a mujer played in shaping those networks. When we finished the oral history, Irene had sorted out and organized a scrapbook that she then showed us. What follows is an audio record of what she showed us.
Yeah.
So this is just for you to kind of, you know, my idea with this is, I think sometimes people get triggered by memories, or like when they look at, you know, old photographs. And also, if you could also describe some of the scenery, specifically in that mini park mural, that would be great. So actually, can we start, let's start with the mini park mural. So if you want to give me that 28th annual one, we can start with that. So tell me a little bit about the scenery of the mini park mural. Like, what, you know, what are we looking at when we see this mural?
Well, I remember now that here is our diosa, the one of the sun. She was the sun because she was the most brightest thing there on the mural. And she was so big. It was so nice to have Graciela. When she came up with the idea, it was wonderful. And then to actually see her paint it, it was great because of the colors that were just bursting out of and the brilliance of La Diosa there. And I believe Patricia did the sun god over here, another god over here. Yeah, there was a bunch of gods. She wanted to blow some air, I guess, across to the sun goddess. And I remember I actually did the air, the clouds, the smoke, blowing over to the goddess over here. And painting the volcano was, I think, again, we wanted, I felt we needed to bring the ambiente of what south of the border, I mean, what a lot of people live with in south of the border, especially like in Guatemala. Oh my God, so many volcanoes there. And I remember visiting Guatemala. It was beautiful. The volcanoes were great. So I think that's what I brought up into this mural. And here is the palm trees. And yeah, as you can see, I think in this picture, this is some really sad looking little trees here in the front. But that was just it. That was just about it, these little sad trees. So I believe we wanted to bring color and bring some greenery into this park where these children are going to be playing, and just to have just a fantasy world for them, something to just, you know, go off into their own creative makeup, so that they can make up their own story about this mural. I'm just really surprised that this one lasted so long, and has been restored twice, and it brings me back again to the whole idea about these palm trees that I remember painting or drawing as a kid, as a second grader, in a public school. And I just remember this big piece of paper, vanilla piece of paper and crayons, and just picking up and going straight into just doing palm trees. I don't know, maybe I needed palm trees, I don't know. So yeah, that brings me back to my childhood. It's working with ideas and making these children that come to visit the mini park, you know, hopefully they'll also spring out with creativity themselves. Yeah.
Who's that on the scaffolding there?
I think I'm going to need my glasses to see this. You know what? That's one of the, I think this is Domingo Rivera painting his mural. The part of this section here was part of an article that had come out on the murals at the in the mission. And see, here is Paco Tacos, and here is the Horizons Unlimited. So yeah, it was part of the article, the general article on the murals in the mission.
One thing that is just so nice to see is not only the palm trees, but also like these details that you brought, like the volcanoes, mm-hmm. that are just so common if you are in Central and South mm-hmm. America. Yeah. What were some of the things that you remember wanting to add in terms of like color or even texture for like the wind, La Diosa, El Viento, the corner, and then all of these details? What are some of those decisions that you remember making even then?
Well, I think, gosh, it's so hard to say what happened so long ago. But, you know, I think it was just basically the color and the fantasy and just the lightness of letting your mind flow sort of freely. And I think we wanted to give the children that whole idea of making their own creations or going home and doing their own creations because they can. Because they've seen it on a wall, they've seen it on painted there in front of them. But, you know, basically bringing the green foliage, the green clean air, clean, you know, just bringing the whole idea of our perhaps our planet, you know, and how we really need it in an urban situation. Yeah.
And inspiring them with the imagery.
Hopefully that's what we were doing, yeah. Inspiring so that they can themselves, you know, experience it. Maybe for the when they grow up, maybe they'll experience it. They'll go to Guatemala, they'll go to Mexico, they'll go to somewhere where they can actually feel it and actually experience and breathe it.
Should we move into Maestropiece? Or is there other things in that finder that you want to show us?
Not really.
From Mujeres Muralistas, maybe? Nothing?
No, these are all mini park, huh? Well, it's just because that one mural is still right. alive and stuff. Still
what
alive.
What is that photo? What is that stuff on that?
This one here?
Oh, that whole page.
This one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I think this was one of the articles of that came out in a paper. I don't know if it was Tecolote because I've cut out this is a cutout from a newspaper clipping. And this was actually a photo taken by, I want to say, Retlaw, this gentleman who actually had a photography shop just right across the street from the very first mural we did. And he came across asking us if he could take pictures of us. And I think he might have been even one of the first professional photographer to come and take pictures of us. And for a minute, he was in shock because he said, "Whoa, I thought you guys were guys. From across the street, that's what I saw." And he was just totally amazed and surprised that we were women. So this is probably one of the first shots of photographs that were taken of us when we were painting the mural at the Pan American mural.
Do you mind pointing out who is who in that picture?
This is Graciela Carrillo. This is me, Irene Perez, Patricia Rodriguez, and Consuelo Mendez. Yeah. Yeah, and again, this is a take from just this. I brought me back to Zacatecas, where when I went to Zacatecas, there was lots of corn growing, magueys. So I wanted to include that in the mural back then. Yeah. And this is Patricia. I believe this is Patricia painting Pan American. Yeah. Yeah, that's Patricia Rodriguez. And I just wanted
show us, yeah.
Okay, one of the last things we did as together as the muralist, we were given an award by the San Francisco Art Commission, who had a festival then. I don't know if they're still doing that anymore, but this was back in 1974. We were given an award to paint a portable mural, since they had no walls, and they usually had the festival done out on the in the plaza in front of the San Francisco City Hall. And this is what the festival looked like the year before. But we were probably located around here, and what we painted was a three-dimensional rhomboidal parallelogram, which had, I believe, six sides. And Consuelo Mendez, myself, Irene Perez, and Patricia Rodriguez, we were the only original Mujeres Muralistas that worked on it, but also Esther Hernandez also worked on this. And I believe Miriam Olivo also did a panel. And this was back in 1974. This is the one that this particular piece is somewhere stored in storage with the San Francisco Art Commission, I believe. Yeah, the art commissioners, yes.
Have you inquired about the stay or where they have it?
That was the last time I seen it that year. That's the last time we saw it. I think that was the last time anybody seen it. I don't know if they ever exhibited anywhere. At least we didn't know about it. If they did, we don't even know if they still have it. So hopefully there's some inquiries done soon on this. And here is the Maestra piece. We were so lucky to, I was very lucky to work with Juan Alicia, Miranda Bergman, Edith Boone, and Susana Cervantes, Mia Dice, and Yvonne Littleton. So lucky to work with them. It was a beautiful experience, and not only just it was Susan Cervantes' idea that she has to do a book on this. We had to do a book, so she it was really her engine that kind of drove the other Juana, Miranda, and Mira. They collaborated to get this book done. And like I said, this was a monumental experience. And as you can see, I think I have Goyo Shauki being held by Rigoberta Manchu, and she's actually breaking out of the stone. And I think I talked a lot about breaking out, you know. Breaking chains. No, we didn't want to, you know. So I painted actually Goyo Shauki breaking out of the stone that she was embedded in.
What's the story of Goyo Shauki?
Goyo Shauki was the goddess of the moon, and she was part, this is the mythology. The mythology is that she was had 400 brothers, and they were the stars. And the mother, Kwakwiklli, was pregnant with Huitzilipotzli, who was the god of war. And Goyo Shauki was considered the goddess of peace. So Goyo Shauki, the myth is she conspired with her brothers to kill the mother, Kwakwiklli, so that the god of war won't be born. So somehow, the god of was born, Huitzilipotzli was born, and which as soon as he was born, he massacred, I guess, all the brothers, including Goyo Shauki, because their fight to keep the god of war from being born didn't work out. You know, he found out about it somehow. I don't know. This crazy story. So, but it's a mythology, and I feel that it's kind of like the beginning of male chauvinism, patriarchy, and that was this. You know, that's what we had to deal with since then. You know, but. Here we are.
Goyo Shauki, when you decided to depict her in that mural, mm-hmm. and you're saying that Rigoberta, in this case, is holding mm-hmm. her, what is the significance of that in your life? Because that's also an icon, mm-hmm. and more importantly, a myth mm-hmm. that you came back to throughout your life. What is the meaning to Irene Perez?
Okay, when I first saw Goyo Shauki in the ground in Mexico City, I thought, wow, such a beautiful image, such a beautiful piece of work. You know, it just looks so beautiful. And I remember when I left Mexico City, went back home, back then there were still telephone books, and then on the telephone book in our hotel room was Goyo Shauki, the stone of Goyo Shauki. I just ripped it out because there wasn't very many images of Goyo Shauki. I took it home, and then I brought it back home and put it in my studio. I said, okay, I'm gonna draw this. It's so beautiful. Oh my god, yes, the Diosa de la Luna, and I'm once I started looking at the actual image of Goyo Shalky in the stone, I said, oh my God, wait a minute, what's going on here? She's all dismembered. She's in pieces. And what happened here? And this is before I even knew what the mythology, what the story was behind Goyo Shalky. I just thought she was just such a beautiful image. She was a diosa de la luna. I was just like, wow. I was starstruck. Yeah. So, and that's when I put her away and figure out what I'm going to do with her. So in the early 80s, maybe 1983, 84, it started to come back to me that I need to put her back together because I could not find any images of her actually, you know, as a whole person, as a whole goddess. So I started painting her and I started drawing her piece by piece, putting her back together, so that when I got to the women's building, I said, I got to put her in it and I got to put her all whole, because that's, at that time, that's where I had managed to get myself was... she was beginning to become whole, and one more last part. I wanted her to break out of the stone. I wanted her to like to come alive, to become the Chicana movement in a way, to put us back together, to put all Chicanas. Since we're so fragmented, we're not allowed to even be ourselves in our culture. So I just felt that, you know, we needed Goyo Shalky to show us the light in the darkness, and as the Diosa de la Luna. So she had her brushes ready to paint, and... and breaking out. And so Rigoberta Manchu, she was our very first person that we wanted to put no matter what. So she needed to be big. She needed to look out into our community with Yemaya on this side, which is who is the goddess of the water, the ocean, in the Caribbean culture.
That's one of the most beautiful things, which is you have Mayan and Aztec mythology, as well as just other Central American. Mm-hmm. And you have Caribbean, which is also African, Yoruba religion, which is Yemaya. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, someone as current in that moment and still so important, like Rigoberta Menchú, all of those are depicted there. Mm-hmm. And it's such a good way of really joining a lot of different influences and mythologies in a way that really represents all of the women that, including yourself, created this maestra piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you said it perfectly. and that's, I think, the wonderful play that we had of so many different women, and we were a little bit more mature. And we were, you know, and we've were able to put all of these influences in a mural that would work just so completely. I mean, it's just Rigoberta Menchú, the Nobel Peace Prize person who had won the Nobel Peace Prize. I can't remember what year, but and we were so lucky to meet her. We wanted her to be with us with a dedication, but her schedule did not allow it. But she was able to visit us and to come and see the mural, because she just played such a central part to it. Just like our icon, our heroine, yes.
You good? I'm great. I think I'm great. I don't want to take any more of your time because I know you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Much of it. Okay. Well, thank you guys for coming.
And thank you for the explanation. I think it got really deep with the explanation of
with the Goya Shelkie.
Yeah, breaking out of the stone and being membered back together, and the metaphor with Chicanas breaking out of that stone and being, you know, coming to life. Yeah, thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah. Well, thank you, too, because I know there's some other Chicana writers like Gloria Anzaldúa, who, once I read what she was writing, I say, wow, how did she know what I was thinking? I mean, you know, she just put it so beautifully in words, because I was just always just doing it visually, and nobody came around to interview me, you know, as far as asking in. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Gloria is an icon. Sure.
Gloria, definitely, yeah.
Gloria is legendary for sure.
Oh, she's legendary, yeah. She's awesome. And I only met her once before she passed, just before she passed. Yeah, that was shocking.
Great.
Okay, all righty, but thank you so much, guys.
This oral history of Irene Perez was a collaborative effort, like murals also are. The team behind it was
Erica Gengzi,
Maisa Plunk Graham,
who served as executive producers,
Natalia De La Rosa,
who served as a production assistant. The rest of the team included
Javier Briones,
Kevin Carr,
Chad Curver,
Carrie Cordova,
Stephanie Garces,
Melissa San Miguel,
Chris Tipton King,
and he was produced and mixed by me, Camilo Garzón. The Mission Murals project was organized by the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art and funded by the Institute for Museum and Library Services. Thanks for listening.